Hello, friends, and well, now at last, I think we have a chance to continue with our work on telepathy and the etheric vehicle. We'll be having tonight work with the sacred pentagram in a little while, so this will be a fairly short program. It is program number 47, and we're working approximately from page 110. Let's see if there's anything of importance. A little segue. We've been talking about mental telepathy. It is carried on in mental substance. And so another vehicle, says the Tibetan, other than the astral vehicle, is involved and employed, that of the mental body. It is the, he says, the seed or germ of higher contacts and of impressions coming from levels higher than the buddhic or intuitional plane. Well, maybe those, that would be the atmic plane and beyond. It is related to the higher aspect of the universal mind. And let me suggest that that begins on cosmic planes, but impresses the atmic plane, which is a plane within our cosmic physical etheric plane, which is endowed with will, but with mind as well. So, anyway, says the Tibetan, it is related to the higher aspect of the universal mind, and that is to the intelligent will. Now, in both cases, the lower aspect of love, emotional and sensitive astral response, and the pure love of the soul are involved. And that is if the seed or the germ is used properly. Okay. So, sometimes we say, oh yeah, that's mental telepathy, when in fact it's not mental telepathy at all. It is astral, instinctual telepathy. And we have a difficult time distinguishing, I think, between the two. Anything that arrives as an impression, we simply tend to call it mental telepathy. But we have to distinguish between instinctual, astral, unconscious telepathy and true mental telepathy, which is the seed or germ of still higher contacts. Okay, well, that will take us to page 110. And the Tibetan tells us, let me tighten this up a little bit here. The Tibetan tells us that astral sympathetic sensitivity, see, that's another way of looking at the astral telepathy. We can call it a sympathetic sensitivity or sympathetic telepathy, well, is fallible, says the Tibetan, and frequently erroneous in its conjectures and interpretations. And that's something that emotionally based human beings have to take into consideration. Mostly they're just moved, and they don't know why. I'm somehow just keeping in my mind that image of the attempted takeover of Congress by people who were driven by astrality and hardly knowing why they were doing what they were doing. Whatever mentality they had was based upon illusion and not any kind of true mental telepathy. So this is, again, emphasizing the way that astrality gets in the way. Now, there is a lower form of telepathy, and even of mental telepathy, using thought substance, which has been tainted by illusion. But DK goes on to say the higher telepathy, also a form of sensitivity, and which is an entering door or concept, becomes eventually infallible. Now, so higher telepathy, a form of sensitivity, becomes eventually infallible in its earlier stages, where methods of interpretation and deduction are concerned. It may prove frequently at fault. So we do not overlook the idea or the thought that illusion may plague the earlier forms of mental telepathy. Now, the world is filled with conspiracy theories at the moment. And these are clearly illusory. It's not the true mental telepathy. It's not the true higher form of telepathy. The true form higher than astral telepathy. As I say, it can be plagued by illusion, and when I look at those people marauding through the temple of democracy in the United States, I think they were the victim both of astral telepathy and of illusory mental telepathy, which had proven itself to be at fault. Okay. But all of that was fairly instinctual, and they did not know, let us say, the majority of them, that they were being victimized, believing in what has been called here the big lie, the deliberate lies of a former and intensely narcissistic president who cared little or nothing for the welfare of the country as a democratic nation, as a democracy. I'm not speaking of a party now, I'm speaking of the principle of democracy, which is so related to the hierarchical form of government at this time. So going on with the Tibetan, straight mental telepathy is one of the highest demonstrations of the personality. It is in the nature of a bridging faculty, for it is one of the major steps towards higher impression. So straight mental telepathy a bridging faculty, a major, one of the major steps towards higher impression. It always presupposes a relatively high stage of mental development. Now, obviously, we didn't see that. The people who were truly mentally developed were not the insurrectionists, the overthrowers, the threateners, the marauders, maybe the demagogues had this high stage, relatively, of mental development, but it was a very selfish and narcissistic, power-hungry form of mental development. So it's a presupposes true mental telepathy, a relatively high stage of mental development, and that is one reason why it is not yet regarded as a reputable, proved and provable capacity in the human being. Well, I guess he's saying that humanity is not there yet. Humanity, by and large, has not yet developed the requisite high stage of mental development. It's on its way, but not yet. So let's distinguish there, if we can do that. Okay. You can see, friends, how necessary it will be to read this document, this book, over and over again, the way the members of the Tibetans first organized seed group, the telepathic interpreters, they had a chance to do that. I'm somehow aware that no matter what we're doing, we're skimming a little bit, unless we really take the time. And of course, the Tibetans' output, and think of, you know, poor Alice Bailey, but the Tibetans' output has been so voluminous, and that is, shall we say, consisting of many volumes, as his future work will, I think, that we cannot, as much as we would like, cover all of it. We can get general ideas and maybe cover some of this voluminous output with greater attention than others. So, we're not yet, as a race, sufficiently developed mentally in order to help telepathy become reputable, proved and provable as a capacity within the human being. We know it exists, but it is still, because of the factor of illusion, much subject to error. Now, in the case of the hierarchy, the collection of masters, their kind of communication with each other, which is of a telepathic nature, will not be subject to error. But we are not, and this I really want to emphasize, my voice is a little dry, forgive me. We are not so much esotericists, you know. People say we're esotericists. We're not. We're students of esotericism. We are students of the esoteric doctrine. Let's keep that humility, that adjusted sense of right proportion, which tells us who we really are, rather than carelessly presume that we are actually esotericists. Okay. So, because we are not in a position where our developed faculties of a mental nature will assist in rendering such mental telepathy as we can access as reputable, proved, and provable, then because of that, at first, because we can't say it always is the case. Look, I'm going to say, is the mind the slayer of the real? Well, if the mind is not developed enough, yes, it is then the slayer of the real. But the planetary logos has a mind. The solar logos and all the sacred planets have minds, and the level of reality mentally, which they access from the cosmic mental plane, is far beyond this minimal reputability, provability that we are struggling towards. So when not sufficiently developed, I would say, and when it crushes out other necessary impressions, the mind then is, for such individuals and groups, the slayer of the real, but not when we're talking about the great beings who are sacred planetary logoi, solar logoi, and beyond. The mind is a cosmic principle, and it's going to be found at the very height of any universe. So again, there's relativity here. And when we look at such a statement that the mind is the slayer of the real, we have to understand that this is an applicable truth regarding humanity, but also a very partial truth in the light of the larger context. So, okay, the mind, for the illusory mind of man, is the slayer of the real, and the sources and modes of subjective knowledge still remain in the dark areas of human consciousness. The normal processes of evolution will, however, He's saying we can really count on it. Will, however, prove introconvertibly the existence of faculties which make the higher spiritual and subjective impressions possible and even normal. So we can count on the forward thrust, the upward thrust of evolution. And rather than being something toward which we must strive and which we cannot quite attain, we will find that these higher faculties, as they are in the case of the Tibetan and other masters, prove to be normal. Now, probably there's none of us right now for whom these higher faculties are quite normal. We're as students of the great doctrine and as experimenters with the science of impression and with considering us as engenderers, those who engender, a sensitive magnetic aura. Well, nothing yet normal every day about our condition. The humility factor really must be kept in the consciousness. I guess maybe I'm talking frequently about that. That was not what I was hoping for. I guess, though, we can have a considerable degree of confidence that we are being swept in the right direction, an elevatory direction, and give us a few incarnations, time, and we will be in a much better position to access the higher impressions. Let's think about that. I think it's quite impossible for us to think about, normally anyway, what we were like 3, 4, 5, 10 incarnations ago. Probably we would be relatively shocked at our lack of development and of regarding our many errors. And I think the Tibetan said to RSU, who by the time she was working with Alice Bailey was already a highly trusted disciple, that she would be very surprised if she could see herself as she was something like five lives ago. I think we're well served to avoid the Napoleon or the Napoleon complex or the Cleopatra complex. There are some people who, seriously, they fall into that, and they claim to have been people in incarnations whose very ray nature would contradict the possibility of being the same individual in those forms. But then they don't know too much about the rays, and they don't realize that impossibility. Maybe it's a little hard to be Buddha's wife and the Virgin Mary and oh, God knows what, you know. Cleopatra, I suppose. The Virgin Mary and Cleopatra and Buddha's mother or wife or Mary, and maybe let's throw Mary Magdalene into the mix. It becomes ludicrous due to the ignorance that would prevent them from making such claims. But who knows, when the when the Tibetan says to us, you'd be very surprised to see yourself, let's say five lives ago, maybe we were individuals making such preposterous claims. One hopes not, but the inevitability of it, well, it's probably there. Okay. Okay, now, as I say, these particular programs have to be, unfortunately, relatively short. Such is my condition and the condition of our other broadcasts and Zoomcasts. So the Tibetan goes on, and he says, this supreme science of contact, he's, may I suggest, he's talked more about the underpinnings of this supreme science of contact than he has maybe about the contact itself. Much time spent on the science of impression, the science of invocation and evocation, the science of relationship, a number of supportive sciences, maybe I haven't named them all, but that's been the focus of his attention in the foregoing pages. This supreme science of contact, he says, can be, as already explained, broken up into the following phases, which are progressively developed from each other. Okay. Well, I think we have to, maybe he's going to give us a bit of a repetition here, but always coming up with a different angle, so that he's not simply repeating himself, except in the case of very important points, where he often tells you he is repeating himself. So it's broken up into the following phases. Forget not the inevitable continuity, which is the outstanding characteristic of the evolutionary process. And basically he's saying they're all, these phases are developed from each other, so it would be interesting to see how he views that inevitable continuity, which is the outstanding characteristic. So much to keep within your magnetic aura, so to speak, and to dispense that which has made impression upon your magnetic aura, dispense it to others, as the Tibetan is dispensing it to us. Okay. Now, well, there's quite a bit here. Quite a bit. Which gives, we might say, the sequence of development in this evolutionary process. So astral sensitive awareness, this is going to be one, and let's see if I can, yeah. This is based, says the Tibetan, upon the reactions of the solar plexus, and the entire process is carried forward upon the astral plane and with astral substance. This in its, so it's based on the reactions of the solar plexus, and it's carried forward on the astral plane with astral substance. This, in its highest form, becomes the factor which later makes intuitive awareness and intuitive sensitivity possible. Okay. Then the process is carried forward in Buddhic substance. We have learned that in white magic, a treatise on white magic, that there are two types of devas carrying the same name, which manifest through the astral body and through the Buddhic vehicle, and they are called Agni Suryans. So there's a switch here from the astral sensitivity, which is at first very unguided, and inhibitory and misleading, to a Buddhic process, which is eventually filled with love and infallible. Aspirants are, at one stage of their development, strongly astral Buddhic in their nature. And this should be remembered. Even some of the masters who are lords of compassion apparently have followed this line. The Master Jesus, the Master Serapis. So now we're looking at the way evolution takes place and how one phase of evolution develops from another, or gives way to another. We are studying these things, we who are at a very preliminary stage in our evolutionary development of the higher contacts. Then comes, see, this is going to be an important summary, right? Inevitable continuity. That's what we have. Inevitable continuity, which is the outstanding characteristic of the evolutionary process. Okay. Now, the next thing to come along in this evolutionary process is mental telepathy. And this, says the Tibetan, involves naturally two minds or several minds, and the process is carried forward in the substance of the mental plane. So involves naturally two minds or several minds. Process carried forward in the substance of the mental plane. It's the factor, says the Tibetan, which makes possible the activity we call impression. This impression, now we're going to learn where it comes from, or at least have a repeat of the sequence. This impression comes largely from certain aspects of the mental plane. Okay. So, let's see which. But you can see that the first thing to occur is this kind of instinctual astral telepathy. And then, in the evolutionary process, it gives way by whatever series of transformations or by whatever means change is effected to mental telepathy. Okay. So let's see. Comes from certain aspects of the mental plane. And the Tibetan will say what? What will he say? Looks like this is correct. The soul of the telepathic individual, using the knowledge petals of the egoic lotus, a high form of mental intelligence. Now, it may take quite a while for those knowledge petals to open. But once they do, and once full development within the Hall of Ignorance has been accomplished, there is a high form of mental intelligence. Sometimes we may have noted that Virgo people, Virgo being ruled by Mercury ordinarily and in a exalted position, that Virgo people are very intelligent. So by the time this type of soul impression can occur, that intelligence has been built up in the Hall of Ignorance. Now, it seems contradictory to talk about ignorance and intelligence at the same time, but the ignorance of which we are speaking is ignorance of a higher self, ignorance of a higher pair of opposites, or a higher member of a pair of opposites, which is cultivated in the Hall of Learning, which is the circle of love petals in the egoic lotus. So you can be very intelligent in the Hall of Ignorance, but you are living with regard to one pole alone. You are not bipolar. Well, in a positive sense. I don't want to talk about the disease called manic depression. I have seen that disease at work, and it's really something to behold, how these examples of mania and of depression follow one another so rapidly. I'll be right back to finish. Now, going on to another type of impression from the realm of soul or slightly beyond, we have impression from the abstract mind, so-called. Maybe the Tibetan has some other ideas about what it should be called, quite possibly. This aspect of mental substance, says the Tibetan, is largely used by the hierarchy in order to reach the minds of disciples. Well, let me suggest that the kinds of thoughts there generated there, would not be of interest to people unless they were already on the path of discipleship, or at least of a very high mental caliber. So, largely used by hierarchy in order to reach the minds of disciples. It's only, says the Tibetan, within the last few centuries that the hierarchy has shifted the focus of its living attention onto the buddhi plane and away from the mental plane. Now, that's interesting because, you know, I had thought of this as being a shift which occurred around the year 1925. However, it looks like this shift was in process even earlier. DK tells us the last few centuries. Well, hierarchy tries to meet the capability of the growing intelligence and presumably the growing possibility of love wisdom, which will be found in evolving humanity. Let's see why he says this shift is possible. So, you know, because on the Buddhic plane, we do have factors which can affect the mind very strongly. It is the area of pure reason and of transcendental mind, and suggests a higher example of the energy of Mercury. This has become possible because, this is the Tibetan speaking, because the aspirants of the world are now sensitive to contacts which are founded upon an astral Buddhic consciousness, but which are carried on within mental substance. Now that is interesting. Aspirants of the world, now sensitive to some astral Buddhic contents, consciousness, but carried on in mental substance. This necessarily, says the Tibetan, involves the three aspects of the mind found therein. So the concrete mind on the lower four subplanes of the mental plane, the son of mind found particularly upon the second and third subplane of the our normal mental plane, and the abstract sensitivity or reaction. This three aspects of the mind. And this, says the Tibetan, involves an activity of the, this involves on the physical plane, an activity of the pituitary body, as you can readily see, and also the use of the Ajna Center. And the pituitary body is going to be connected with the concrete mind, and the Ajna Center, more a triangle. Well, I think we can look at it as a triangle, but at least let us say that it will involve sensitivity to the spiritual triad. Okay. There's just so much. You can begin to get the idea a little bit of what the Tibetan really knows. How he can put all these indications together. Now we have to think for a moment about the astral Buddhic consciousness, which is carried on within mental substance. And as I say, the whole idea of the transcendental mind and let us call it pure reason, maybe an aspect of the intuition, is here involved. So, let's take a look at this. Yeah, I'm going to kind of keep it in the in our color yellow. It is Mercury's color, you are well aware. And when we see the images of the human aura, the Leadbeater images, we find that that which represents mentality is so often in the color yellow. Now, oh, You know, I regret that this must be a relatively short program, but I'm on call for many things, including forthcoming issues. So what are we doing? We are looking at the stage of evolution, stages of evolution, and how one activity at a certain point of tension evolves, it seems, from an activity, or at least follows upon an activity at a lesser point of tension. That's what we are actually seeming to do. Now, lying, so, you know, this has been program 47, and this is the 17th of December, and we have from 110, sorry, to 112. That's where we are, telepathy and the etheric vehicle. But now we will begin at 112, and it will be program 48. So I'm in around an hour or just a little more, and or less. And I always have high hopes that somehow I'll be able to continue, and oftentimes it just doesn't work out because of other responsibilities. But in this evolutionary process, looking ahead, the science of occult impression will be undertaken, and the science of invocation and evocation, these have been listed earlier, maybe a different angle will come upon them, and that's going to be a long one. So those two particularly, sensitivity to impression will be dealt with, and let's see, the plan as dynamic substance. The plan is substance. That may be hard to fathom, but let's see. Some different views on the nature of the plan. And then, a little before we get to the end of this section, we have the divine will as the impressing agent. And finally, we'll get to 15. Yes. Interplanetary and extraplanetary relationships. So it's a long section, and we'll have to treat it carefully, which means somewhat slowly. There are not too many more of these sections. The whole book is over around another 50 pages after number 15, but still that's an appreciable number of programs. No question about that. So, okay. This will have to be it for the moment. If I can... Yeah. It'll be program 48. And I'm doing my best to... That will do. Okay, friends, so Tui and I and the communications team who labor to bring you what the Tibetan is saying, we wish you a good absorption. And a difficult book, but we wish you a good absorption of the whole great science of telepathy, which is part of the supreme science of contact. Now remember, we're now discussing continuity in the great process of evolution. That is our task at the moment. So we'll wish you well and stop the recording, and we'll be back with a sacred pentagram in just a little while. Okay, here we go. Bye for now.